shoots, scores! DK wins it for an end round! Biggest man in MLS comes up huge.
What is going on, guys? Welcome back to the Lions Blog Podcast. This is your host, Gavin. We are back with another Lions Blog episode for you guys. It has been a hot minute. I know I released a solo podcast while I was out walking my dogs the other day.
That was a modern day classic. Oh, yeah. It was. I loved it.
Yeah, you had a pretty funny response to that.
It was a cry for help, and I did feel bad for the dog, but you know what? It should have been called Gavin Unfiltered, because it was good. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I maybe should have called it that. I was just deep in my thoughts while I was walking the dogs. Usually I listen to podcasts or listen to music. I had nothing on. I was just thinking. I was like, let's talk some Orlando City. Let's just yap my trap. So that's exactly what I did. But that is the last time you've heard from us. Obviously, you've heard Daniel here. So, Daniel, how are you doing tonight?
Yeah, pretty good. I apologize in advance if you hear any coughs or sniffles. I'm doing my best to suppress it, but I wanted to make an effort to come on here today.
We really appreciate that. We know you're just coughing and sniffling because you're sad that you are on the podcast, but that is okay. Adam?
I lost a bet, and this is the result. So.
Yep. Locked for life.
Daniel and I are just here so Gavin has someone to sound smart compared to. That's what he pays us the really big podcasting dollars for.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Those dollars that we all make, those incentives. You know, they got as high as... I'm actually out $50. I had to pay Gavin tonight because he was short of money.
Oh, yeah. I do now remember Gavin does owe everyone that has ever appeared on this podcast a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of people when you think about it.
Yeah.
Just to boost my ego.
Yeah. Julia Poe's still waiting for her check.
Oh, yeah. Fair enough. Yeah.
Well, you know, you just got that border collie, and they're kind of hard to find, but you could probably shift that border collie and get some of that money back right away.
Yeah. I did adopt a dog today. We could ship her off. No, I really didn't care about the tweet that y'all are talking about. It just made me laugh because, like,
oh yeah,
idiotic people exist.
It's like one of those SNL cold opens.
I mean, yeah.
Basically. Which are you know, opening ramblings are always just the same quality of comedic value as the SNL writers' room. I think that's fair to say.
Well, it's called dry wit and being authentic rather than these pre-planned tweets that people want to put out there and trigger everyone and then, you know, pretend like they're funny when they're not. They're actually just assholes. So, yeah, I agree. We should be on Saturday Night Live. Could be called, the Three Stooges or something like that.
Contact, who is it? NBC? Are they NBC?
They're all over the place. I think they are NBC.
Okay, so we need to contact NBC and get the three of us on Saturday Night Live. Chase can come too, I guess. He looks pretty.
Yeah, I'm pretty
bored. He'll do the opening monologue because you got to draw everyone in, and then
he'll do the Rodrigo Schlegel.
Yeah,
and then he'll get on there.
Absolutely. We'll have him do a Schlegel sketch.
Yeah, gotta do a Schlegel sketch. All right, let's get into the podcast. It's been a minute, like we've said, since we've podcasted. I think our last podcast. Oh my god, I don't remember. Was it? I'm trying to pull up the schedule here. Adam,
we're
do you know?
Bad at our jobs. You think
was
I
it
know.
The was it the Dallas game? It might have been after the Dallas loss. Sure, and then we had the international break. Oh, you know what? The last podcast was the thorough assessment on Oscar Pereja during the international break.
It was that.
Yeah. So we've played New England. We tied them 1-1. We beat Houston. We beat them 2-1. We lost to Cincinnati.
Okay.
We beat Nashville. We lost to DC and we beat Miami.
So if you would like to just go back and listen to that Oscar Pereja episode, I think it all still applies.
That's the problem. I think that's a good starting point, Adam, actually. I know you were like half joking, but like...
Only half joking. No, exactly. I was only half joking.
Yeah, because it does still all apply. And I think I said that in that one episode I released where it's like everything's the same. We're the same club. Every single game's the same. The attack is boring to watch. The defense is meh. We struggle in transition. We struggle to create an offensive transition. We're a hard team to watch right now. So, Daniel, maybe I'll just start with you. What has been your take over the last 5-6 matches when watching Orlando City? Yeah, I'll just end it there.
Yeah, I'll try and sum this up. You know, I don't want to go on too long, but I think the comparison I'd make to Orlando right now is I'd look at Austin FC. Let's just look at them for a minute. And I've watched, you know, quite a few other teams in MLS, and what's impressed me with a team like Austin is that they've got on a system together that's not overly complicated. Like, you could look at their lineup that they play, and players just seem to be in their natural roles, doing what they're expected to do, but they're doing it really well. And they're very well drilled and very well coached. But more importantly, when they play at home, they just play fearlessly and they try to attack. I think the biggest problem with Orlando right now is, I think I mentioned this the last time I was in the podcast, but they really struggle with an identity. Like, I just don't know what type of team Orlando City is. I just don't. I mean, they're not strong enough defensively to be a defensive team. They're not quick enough, don't have enough guile or trickiness to be a good attacking team. And it seems to me that the coach is just putting the curtails on anybody who has any flair right now. You know, I mean, you could say that the Van der Water transfer out is maybe a symptom of that. I'm not entirely sure what went down with him, but it just seems that Oscar doesn't want too many individual players, but, you know, with the expression on the team. And as such, it's making Orlando very predictable. It's like, if there's no Pereira, there's no attack, basically. Pato seems to be wasted right now. Feel kind of bad for him, to be honest, because I think he's a good player and he needs to be involved more. And even Erkin Kara, I know that he's on the agenda for today, so we're going to get into that more. But, you know, I've noticed with some of the feedback from the support that he's getting some flack, but he's really getting table scraps right now to feed off. It just seems like we just don't have any cohesion, and we have one plan. And if teams can suss that plan out, which is, you know, catching Orlando on the break, essentially, and getting the ball in behind them, Orlando just becomes very predictable and easy to beat. So not sure how much more I can say about it. I should let you guys get in on that.
No, look, there's a whole podcast of responses that I could have to that. And I think that was a good summarization. Adam, how are you feeling on the last few games?
Yeah, only thing I would add, I think that was a really good summary. The only thing I would add to that is that, and I know I said, you know, half-jokingly, listen to the Oscar Pereira episode when we reviewed, that not much has changed. I have noticed he is trying at least some new things. We saw a three at the back start. You've seen a few different tactical wrinkles, nothing like super wholesale changes, but we've, you know, seen different players start in different formations. To me, Orlando City, we still somehow, despite literally everyone being disappointed in how we've played and how we've looked, and especially the home results, find ourselves in an Open Cup semifinal and in still above the playoff line. And honestly, not necessarily within striking distance of the Shield, but, you know, not too far out of first place. The East is very much a toss-up. And so we find ourselves in this position, and it's almost like you get asked out by, like, your crush. And, you know, and there's, like, a big school dance this weekend or whatever.
Never happened for me, by the way, so I can't
never relate. Happened. Oh, well, sorry, Daniel. Well, beautiful wife and kids, you know.
Not everyone can enjoy that feeling, Daniel. Sorry.
But anyway, so your crush asked you out to the dance this weekend. It's in 2 days, and you realize, oh, shit, I don't have anything to wear. So we go to the store, and we're, like, in the middle of our shopping montage. We're, like, just trying on all these ridiculous things, and nothing feels right. I feel like that's what we're in the middle of right now. And I don't know if we're going to have a happy ending. I don't know if this is, like, you know, a parody movie where, like, everything ends horribly for everyone, or if it's, like, the happily ever after. We don't know.
Well, let me ask you, if it's a parody movie, and let's say that parody movie is American Pie, who's getting to shag the pie? I just think this is very important that we know.
You, Daniel. You.
Kingston.
Kingston gets the pie.
Kingston gets the pie.
Okay, well, just get him a bib or something, because it's going to get a bit messy. Okay.
Okay.
Just, yeah.
Okay, yeah, so the, like, I think I agree very much with Daniel that the team lacks identity right now, and I think they're trying a bunch of different hats on and seeing if something sticks, and like, oh, is this a way that we can reliably replicate playing this way to win a soccer game? And so far, the only way that has happened is to shit house for 120 minutes and then win in penalties. It's apparently the only reliable way we have. So, you know, we might win Open Cup like that.
I mean, that, yeah, that's our biggest hope right now. I really liked that. I don't know what the word is. Not metaphor. I like that metaphor.
Analogy?
You used. Analogy. Thank you. I said simile in my mind. I said metaphor out loud, and the right word was analogy. So, no, I really liked it because a podcast, an Arsenal podcast I listened to, the way he says basically what you were saying is the coach is in the washing machine. So he's just tumbling. He's, you know, he's just going. He's trying to find a solution. I like yours, you know, so the date you need to go pick out clothes and you're in your shopping montage. We are trying different solutions, but guess what we're not doing?
Winning in convincing fashion.
We're not changing our playing style. We have the same principles of play with different outfits. We have the same dark jacket. We have the same red colored tie, maybe with just different patterns, but it's all the same thing. We're just trying on the clothes, different patterns, not different colors.
Here's I think a disconnect here.
Are you cross-dressing again, Gavin?
Yes.
Okay, fair enough.
I don't necessarily think there's anything wrong with the mentality of the team or the headspace they're in. Because, like I said, we're in an Open Cup semifinal. We're above the playoff line. The players haven't given up on Pareja. They haven't lost their fight. I don't watch a game and see guys who aren't trying, aren't running, aren't pressing. I see a lack of ideas. So I don't necessarily think that, you know, while we are in this position that the coaching staff now, there's definitely an argument to be made that they should go this route in trying wholesale changes and just completely, you know, wearing like, I don't know, a trench coat. That don't wear a trench coat. That's the first different thing I thought of. Just completely going off the wall. There's an argument to be made that like probably our tactical idea, just the foundation, won't work. But while we are in this position, I think they're afraid and for good reason to make the giant changes that may be necessary.
So I understand that, but one of the items on the agenda was that fans are really frustrated with Pareja. Fans are really frustrated with the team right now. And there's a reason behind that. Like you said, we are 5 points off first place. And if, you know, 5 points off first place with the game in hand. And if you said 20 games in the season will be 5 points off first place, a lot of fans would be happy. Why are fans not happy? Daniel, I'm going to move over to you. To me, it's because the style of play is not fun to watch, and we can all see that these matches, we are winning them very, very close, and we're not playing convincing at all.
No, I mean, it's you know, what tends to keep good teams going for the long term is just having a style of play that you know, it's more about committing other teams to think about you, not the other way around. What I think about Orlando and Oscar in particular is that our game plan is almost adjusted to counter threats of the other team and not really to impose ourselves. Now, you could, let's be fair to Oscar, he probably does need some more resources to be able to put out week to week, you know, like a strong side that plays the game on its own terms. That's what I identify with a winning team, and that for me is what would keep me watching games. Like, results will naturally come from playing like that. So the results part of it doesn't particularly bother me in that respect. I'd rather play three home games, win two and lose one, than play three and draw all three and proudly claim that we haven't been beaten at home, you know? I think that fans in this day and age, I mean, it's an entertainment sport, and yeah, you want to win and you want to go through the ups and the downs, but you've got to play a style and you've got to have an attitude to the game that says, look, you're coming to our house here. It's not the other way around. You know, so we're going to play you and you're going to have to defend us, not the other way around. And that to me is the underlying problem. And you know, I don't know if Oscar's the type of guy that can change his ways to be like that, to be that risky. But I think
that's what
a lot of fans want to see. And I stand firm in the belief that if you adopt that mentality, I mean, yeah, you're going to lose a few games, but you're going to win a whole lot more, especially in a league like MLS, where I feel like the margins are certainly clearly defined in MLS, but you can overcome those with a good, you know, sort of a few good investments, you know? Like we were just talking before this recording about Pablo Dybala, for instance. Now, I'm not saying that they would go and get Dybala, but imagine if they could just pick somebody up that can go and put the game on its ass and just elevate your team to the next level. That's precisely what they need to do. And then they need to trust the guy to do it. And
that's what we try to do with Facundo Torres, I feel like, right? But he hasn't stepped up and been that dominant player we wanted him to be. Or maybe that's just me speaking on a fan's perspective and the club didn't see him in that light. I don't know. But
I think he's done all right. I mean,
but he hasn't been dominant. The only game we saw him take the game by the scruff of the neck was the Miami Open Cup match.
I mean, he did the best he could in the recent DC game as well.
Yeah, that's true.
But he also came into a losing situation where the negative tactics and the, you know, the poor shape and the dysfunction had already, you know, kind of lost that game. So again, he's not been put into a situation, you know, that's a humanistic situation where you try and get in the best out of everybody. You're putting them into a negative situation already where they just can't. It's too much to overcome, you know. It's too much for one player like Torres to come in and change. Just the same as Mauricio Pereira. Like, we can't continue to rely on a 130-year-old midfielder. You know, you've got to, at some point, you've got to find other solutions in the team. And our game plan right now seems to be to get the ball and pass it out to the player with the worst possible output you can possibly find.
So, Daniel, that's exactly where I was going. So I think a big aspect of this, and you just stumbled upon what I was thinking as you were talking. Yeah. Adam, I think part of the reason why fans are frustrated is we are seeing similar patterns of play, which you and I talked about early in the season, and they're the same ones, get the ball out to Juan, basically. And then Juan's really, really struggling this season in terms of end product. And then also some other things that have been frustrating, at least to me, and I'm sure to other fans, for how many seasons have we been saying we are bad without Pereira? Well, Pereira can't play all the games. So in the games that he's not there, I think the idea was for Pato to be the replacement, but we're not playing well with Pato in for whatever reason. So we haven't fixed that solution yet, or that problem yet either. So a lot of problems that have been hindering this team for years on end, João Moutinho being a left back who is struggling to stay fit. These problems have been going on for years, and we aren't seeing solutions to them. And that's been a real frustration point for me, and I'm sure a lot of fans. What say you, Adam?
I mean, absolutely. Like, in our off-season preview, especially when we talked about the off-season transfer window, then we all agreed, and we said multiple times, I thought we needed another player who can play that 10 attacking midfielder spot, and another player who can play left back at an effective level going forward, not just Kyle Smith doing a job on defense. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that those two positions are where I think most of our creativity comes from when we are being creative. Certainly when Moutinho is on the field, he is actually one of our better creative players. And I don't know if that says more about Joe Moutinho or the rest of the team, but it is a fact. So, it's again, you know, I was saying it since the beginning of this episode, not much has changed. And these problems that have haunted us for the past 2-3 years continue to haunt us. I think a problem, and we've talked about, you know, tactics and how Orlando City wins, right, is third man runs. The idea of, you know, you pass between, and there's one three-man combination, and was it MLS posted the stat or something of like the combined DP goal contributions that we had the most actually in the league, even though they, the three, of course, Cara, Torres, and Pereira combined for apparently 27 goal contributions, which is more than our 23 actual goals. So when we talk about third man runs, there's literally one three-man team within the team that's making those third man runs. It usually goes like Pereira to Torres to Cara is kind of how that goes. But actually, and I'm, you know, taking this on like three tangents because that's what I do, posted a pass map today of Cesar Araujo and Junior Urso this season. And neither one of, and like a pass and touch map, neither one of them has like anything in the box and like very little in the final third. And, you know, when we signed Araujo, we called him Uruguayan Sean Davis because one of his best attributes was progressing the ball and making forward passes from that deep lying six or that eight linkage position. And he's not doing that, which indicates that's a coaching point because he's a player that will naturally try to advance the ball. And he's doing that at a below
no one to pass to. Rate. There's no one to pass to.
It's not selling. I mean, Pereira's there, Torres is there, Pato is there at times. It's not nowhere to pass. There's not no one on.
We don't have the movement into the channels.
No, I agree. I agree.
And that's on the players.
We're saying different words, but meaning the same thing. The players are there to pass to, but I think the coaching points, I think they're not emphasizing off ball movement enough, which is why no one's open. But we have the talent on the field for there to be people to pass to. Now, even Juan, like. Juan is someone who you can pass to. He's a guy, or Benji Michel, someone you can pass to, someone you can stretch the field up the wing and then get it back to your playmaker once you've gotten it into the final third. So we've been really struggling connecting our defense to our midfield, to our offense. They all three seem like separate entities almost instead of a team playing together. And you know, where you create those overloads is when you have a Junior Urso making that third man run where he wasn't previously accounted for by the defense, and then you have a 2-on-1 and the defender's gonna choose wrong either way, and that's how you get that overload for a goal. It's not happening. And it has to be a coaching point. I think that maybe Pareja, because of Antonio Carlos having gone down early season, which he's been on the bench a few games and he still hasn't shown up in a game yet, which I don't know why they're holding him out at this point, but I don't know if they're not as confident kind of sending more guys forward without AC back there, being that he is, when healthy, a top, certainly top 10, I would argue a top 5 defender in the league. Maybe
that's certainly an aspect. That's certainly
sending Urso forward. Like we've seen Urso go forward in past seasons. And even at the beginning of the year, Urso was scoring at a pretty good clip for a midfielder. And then AC went down and we saw him stop doing that a little bit. So I wonder if that's kind of the thing. And then once AC comes back, we're going to see a little more freedom for the midfielders getting forward, which I think is one way we could artificially create a little more offense.
Yeah, I mean, it's a give and take, right? Like we complained about getting caught on the transition. But then when we don't send enough bodies forward, we're annoyed that we're not having a good enough attack. So it's always there's always something that you have to expose. You know, with 12 players on the pitch, it'd be a lot different. But with 11, there's always something you're going to have to expose. And Calling out AC being injured is definitely important. But also, Adam, as you were talking there, I put out a tweet during the game, and I basically said we put way too much towards our buildup and not enough towards making the runs to score the actual goals. So I think that's exactly what you were getting at as well. There's not enough off-ball movement in the final third, and that definitely needs to be improved upon. Daniel, we've been going a long time on that, so let's move strictly to Urchankara. I wanted to talk about him specifically. Like you said, he's been seeing a lot of flack, and that's why I wanted to talk about him. He's been getting called out for not having enough impacts on games other than, you know, the one time he touches the ball, he scores each game. So where does the issue for you lie when it comes to Urchankara?
It's a lack of service and a lack of runners. It's as simple as that for me. Urchankara is not the first striker, especially a big striker. It seems to be like a little prejudice here against big strikers, you know, because Tesho gets a lot of stick as well. And, you know, in other teams around the world, I can think of at Leeds easily, you know, quite a few players that have all been branded lazy and not good enough and whatever else. But the truth of the matter is that there's just not enough runners in the system. And I don't think he's the type of striker that, you know, is adept at creating all of his own space and holding the ball and being able to dribble and run past people. He's not that type of guy.
Guess who did that for him in Austria?
Go on then.
Taxi Fountas.
You're right.
He scored the hat trick on us.
I remember.
And he's like lit the league alight. I think he has, say that three times fast, lit the league alight. Taxi was doing fantastic in Austria.
Mm-hmm.
Came to DC, $7 million, killed us. And those two were the front two for them. Taxi would buzz around him.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And he needs players. He needs...
I mean, ideally, that should be Pato.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's where I was kind of leaning towards earlier when I didn't want to kind of hijack the hot conversation earlier, but for me, you've got a player like Pato who can quite easily play off a guy like Kara, and instantly you've already got defenders having a bit more to think about, and you've got maybe a little more space that other players can exploit, because they're not going to leave Pato and Kara, like, you know, unmarked or anything like that. You know, if they're both on the field, they're going to have to readjust. So for me, it's simply a style issue. You could put Kara into another team right now, like another more attack-minded side, and I can guarantee you he'd have at least 15 goal contributions already this season, you know, goals and assists, because I think he's a good player. I think he's got the hallmarks of a good penalty box striker, but if you haven't got anything going in the box or any space, what can you expect him to do? You could put Ronaldo in the team right now in his role, and he would not improve much more than Cara does. So
I am gonna put this down to Cara a little bit.
Yeah, that's fair.
I don't think Cara moves enough, like, to show for the ball in the channels, in the spaces. He's very much, he sticks on the back line. He doesn't drop in and then turn and run at goal. So that's why he doesn't get the ball. The only way to get him the ball is to force it in. How many times have we seen, I don't know, Juan or Pereira or Facundo or Urso try and fizz a ball into Cara in that central space at the top of the box, and he's got three people circling around him, mm-hmm. and he, you know, at that point you just have to squirm the ball out. You're not going to be able to turn and shoot there. So I think he needs, I do put a little bit of his issues down to his mobility off the ball. Not necessarily his mobility in terms of speed, but his willingness to open up, get available, pass and move. He is a little static, and I do think there are some issues that we're seeing there because of that.
Yeah, but don't you think when they're scouting players that that's the sort of thing they would be looking at? I mean,
yes,
we can look at numbers and spreadsheets all day long, but the point of the matter is you've just got to give them the eye test sometime, and you can see that. I'm sure that you can see from a player used to playing either in a two or, you know, like in a staggered two with one deeper than the other, then surely that's something you would know before you sign him. I mean, he's not just going to magically do something that he wasn't used to doing. Likewise, he's not going to forget something that he was good at doing before. So, I don't know. Maybe he just wasn't looked at closely enough. He's a good player, but maybe he's not the player for this system, is what I think we're maybe leaning towards at the moment.
Ideally, they were expecting a runner on the left in Gaston Gonzalez. I think that's part of it. A better runner on the left than Benji Michel, that's for certain. But still, I don't know.
I think part of the problem there, we've mentioned Gaston Gonzalez a lot on this podcast for, you know, someone who has never played a minute for Orlando City. I struggle to believe that this entire team, a lot of these teams' problems are due to not having Gaston Gonzalez, or even as much as we mentioned, there's no way they're pinning that. How old is he? What, 20, 21, 22? Not, he's not that old. He's a kid. He's a U22 guy.
Something like that.
There's no way they're pinning that much of the system on him.
I'm not saying they're pinning it on him. I'm saying what he would have brought would have opened up so many more possibilities. I don't know if they were pinning that much on him.
I think the biggest thing that we're lacking with playing Benji as left wing, which I do like when we play Faku as left wing because this solves that a little bit, is there's no service from left, especially Moutinho's. There's zero service from left. And so we're forced to use the right service option, which is Juan, who misses Cara a lot. Cara strikes me as the type of guy who doesn't want the ball if he's not going to score. He wants to always be in that spot where if he gets the ball, he can immediately shoot and score. He doesn't want to hold on to it. He doesn't want to make a move with it. He doesn't want to. I don't think he's adverse to, like, you know, making, you know, a little triangular passing move if it results in him getting the ball to score. But I feel like if he moves off the back line, he's no longer in position to score, and so he's not doing his job.
You know what I can't believe we haven't tried a front three of Pereira on the right, Faku on the left, Cara up top, and a midfield of Urso Mendez and Araujo. I can't believe we haven't tried that yet.
Yeah, it's worth a shot.
We tried Urso on the right.
and then that you could was have working decently. You could have Mendez as a pure six and covering the back line, and then Araujo and Urso, you know, more free to get forward.
Yeah. Sorry, that just popped into my head. Yeah, so that's kind of where I stand on Cara, and I think that was a good discussion highlighting his issues.
Now I will say Erchan Cara is exactly who we thought he was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he does get the ball in that position, he scores more often than not. He's got a nose for goal. He's a big, we've seen him try. We saw him try that bite kick, 2 weeks ago. We saw him try a bite kick recently. He tries those spectacular shots. You know, when we watched his Austrian cut-ups, like, it's the exact same player. There's no difference in how he played there versus how he plays here. The difference has been service and the space he has to work.
Yep. So let's go ahead and move on to João Moutinho. Saw a, just like maybe 30 minutes before we started this episode, found a interview with him. It's not long, they just clipped it up. He is talking to Sport TV in Portugal, and it's him basically saying, like, that he loves Orlando, but the next step in his career is he wants to go to Europe, and he feels ready to go to Europe. Daniel, first and foremost, do you think he is gearing up for a move to Europe right now, or do you think he's injured right now? Is there reports on that he's injured?
There's a report that he's injured, I think I'd seen, but I don't know, like, I don't remember it being a long injury.
Let me pull up the injury report, because it was like a training thing, right? Or yeah, warm-ups?
It seemed to be just something. I think it was a warm-up injury, and then he was replaced, and then after that we didn't really hear anything else after it, so.
Yeah, he's questionable on the report.
Yeah, so okay. I don't know. Like, he's probably talked to plus somebody, or his agent probably has at least. And you know, the vibe we're getting is that he's going, especially if he's in, you know, if he's quoted as saying that his next move is going to be over to Europe. So, I mean, all that stands to reason now is that, you know, if he's already decided to go, there's not a lot you can do because there's a 6-month advance period where you're allowed to sign, you know, pre-contract. If there's a way they can get a fee for him now, I mean, they have to take it, right?
Well, we said that with Mueller. They didn't take any fees, probably because they didn't really get a good offer.
True, but Mueller was also a little dick, wasn't he? So, you know, went off and signed a pre-contract and kept it all on the hush-hush, you know? Which, I don't know, like, I saw Mueller yesterday. I saw a highlight of him scoring for Chicago. And, you know, they were 2-0 up and he taps the crest on his shirt and everything, you know? And I've just lost so much respect for Mueller, especially with the way that he handled his departure, and then you know, he goes to Hibs and talks him up, and then after what, 4 months, he leaves.
You want to hear my impersonation of a Hibs fan?
Yes.
Come on then.
Oi, shagging out, will you, mate? That was really bad, but
that sounded more Australian. That was, if you said this is an impression of a Perth Glory fan, I would have applauded you. But
well, no, yeah. Have you seen the thing with him and Owl?
No.
And the Hibs fans. Apparently when he got there, he found an owl somewhere, tweeted a picture of it. And then, you know, he scored like what, one goal there, and that was it.
Mm.
So for his entire time there, when he sucked, and then when he left, Hibs fans would tweet at him like about being an owl lover and like wanting to shag an owl.
Oh my lord.
Yeah, that sounds,
they still tweet that at him.
Yeah, that sounds pretty I would say archetypal.
So Daniel, can you do that in a better Scottish accent?
I can't do shit in an accent right now. My throat is killing me. I'm struggling just to not cough, like I'm fighting that cough. But
so pretend I can do Scottish and make it not sound Australian.
Oh my goodness.
But I thought that was, since we were talking about Chris Mueller, I had to throw that.
Oh,
in.
Is he? So he shags an owl, you said?
Clearly.
Hey man, shagging an owl.
I was not expecting that. Holy
Bob,
shit.
You whiskey nose bugger, he's got your owl. Get it out of there.
Well, that's like 15 out of 10 for me.
That was more I've ever wanted out of anything in this life.
We are completely off the rails. Don't even remember what we were talking about. João Moutinho. Leaving.
how do you go from that to you know, Moutinho, the Portuguese man of war? How do we talk about him?
I don't even know.
I feel like the Chris Mueller discussion is relevant though.
Yeah, it is.
Because we had the same discussion last year when we got, you know, word that Chris Mueller wanted to leave. Do you sell him even like the off-season window before? Do we sell him now? Do we try and make a run at a trophy with him? And at the time, he was coming off, you know, an all-star caliber level season. And certainly when Moutinho is on the field, he has been an effective player for us. Mm-hmm. Do we in the position we're in, Open Cup semifinal, still in a playoff spot, try and win something? Or do we say this probably isn't our year? We might still be able to snag 2 games in the Open Cup without him. You know, do we try and get a fee for him, get some allocation money, and gear up for next season? It's a legitimate question. With the fact that he has been unreliable as far as getting on the field and appears to have an injury right now, which, you know, we don't know if it's an injury that is aggravated from something in the past or if this is a new thing. There's no way to know that. I think that if we could get a substantial fee that would allow us to sign an extra player,
mm-hmm.
you know, on top of just the cap space he would clear up, I think that would be a smart thing to do.
That's the magic question for me. And the big difference between this situation and the Mueller situation right now is that you've got a lot of squads right now in Europe, but in particular going to preseason, and that means a lot of players that are being, you know, being told that they need to leave, they need to find new teams. So, in theory, your player pool should be bigger, right? You should have more options in the market right
That's
now.
That's true. If we could move Moutinho right now and in his stead use the A, the cap space he would free up to get one player and the international. No, he's not international, but the cap space he would free up to get one player, and B, the transfer fee we would get, which would be allocation money in Garber bucks, B, use that to get another player. If we could do kind of a 2-for-1, that would be a good move.
What I would do right now, given all of you just said about cap space and such, I would first of all disregard the fact that we're going to get a fee for Moutinho, because I don't think there will be one. And if there is,
very, very little.
It'll be negligent. So what I would do, given that...
I mean, negligible could still be, you know...
Anything would help, yeah. But I think...
If it's 500K, that's 500...
Yeah, 500K is significant. But what I'm saying is...
I was going to say, like, if it's 500K, that's enough to get... You know, a role player in allocation. I think so.
But what I would do, if I'm the GM, right, this is what I would do. I'd look to do 2 loan deals for players which become permanent in January. I would use the cap space for the salary, and I would do the loan deals.
Yeah. Any way you can get someone in the door.
That's what I would do to get players in the door. Make it permanent in January. Get them in the door now and embed them in. I mean, you know, I think that the position at left back, I mean, every position 1 to 11 is important, but I think Moutinho's position is a little more replaceable than Mueller's was until Mueller decided that he wasn't going to, you know, do it anymore. You know, if we were taking, let's just assume it was DK leaving the team like Mueller at the stage last season, you would have been missing him a lot more, you know. Moutinho, we can feasibly replace him with somebody. I think the impact is lesser. So go out there, get somebody, bring them in on loan, and then just do the deal in January. Clubs want to do that because, particularly in Europe, you've got to register in most leagues now. You've got to register 25 players, and the rest of them, I mean, if you're above the age of 21, you're pretty screwed. You've got to find a club. So there's going to be options out there. There'll definitely be somebody. And from what I'm told about how Ricardo's got everything set up, he's got, you know, 10 or 15 options for every position. So I'm sure there's somebody is available, and that's what the club has to do. They've got to start prioritizing that now and just assume that he's going to go.
I think we need to, and this kind of goes into another topic that I want to talk about quickly, but we need to not be afraid of losing players.
Yep.
We need to say, okay, Moutinho is looking for Europe. Makes sense. This is kind of what we want to be as a club. We want to be a club that takes players, develops them, shoots them off to Europe. Okay? We've done that with Moutinho. He's talking about signing with a team in Portugal, probably. Okay, do it. Don't be afraid to lose him. Don't be afraid. Don't wait till the end of the season. Oh, but what if we lose Moutinho? Then what? Then what? You go out and you sign a left back like we're talking about. I'm not afraid at all to lose a single one of our players as long as we replace them properly. You know, I wasn't afraid to lose DK.
The only one I wouldn't lose is Faku. I'd be afraid of losing him, but otherwise, yeah.
Why would we be? I would not be afraid of losing him because it would force us to go and find a equivalent replacement.
I mean, yeah, I guess if we're getting, you know, 15 million for him, sure, but like, I think that what we've seen of Faku, which is, you know, just quibbling with semantics here, but I think what we've seen of Faku, he will be special sooner rather than later. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. But like, losing Moutinho, whatever. Go pick up a left back.
I think we
can upgrade on Moutinho.
We can. I think the reason, Pete, that some people might think, oh, we can't afford to lose Moutinho is because he's been the best left back we've seen in Orlando City, and I don't think it's particularly close. Certainly no one comes to my mind. And so we haven't seen that position have success.
Put some respect on Berkshire's name, Adam.
I have
US men's national team
in the back of my closet that hasn't seen the light of day in probably 4 or 5 years. A Berkshire shirt jersey. Like, you know, the t-shirt with the name and the number
on it. You gotta break that out one day for a game.
Oh yeah, you need to do it and tie it around your head while singing some drunken songs. But I'll have you know, Adam, that
Berkshire song.
I think I got that shirt in like 2015.
I'll have you know that Berkshire was a vital component of the US women's national team. Okay? Absolutely.
No, Daniel, you can't say that. We're going to get canceled.
Well, if I get canceled, it's going to be telling the truth. Okay.
Okay. But anyway, no, it's be back to the point. How many times did we say that? No, I think we have a higher opinion of Joe Moutinho than the player he actually is. Not to say he's bad. He's not. And if he wants to move to Europe, he should, because that's obviously his career goals. And other players look at that and say, they took this guy who is a starter on their team they didn't have a backup for, and they let him pursue his dreams. I want to come there. Mm-hmm. You know? But there are other guys who can do that job, who have a nice left foot, who can put in a cross, who play the left back position. There are other guys out there. And we could get one of them, assuming we just get Moutinho's contract off the books. That opens up space for another contract. And yeah, now is the time. I think we should be a lot more aggressive in the summer window than we have been in years past. Mm-hmm. Because that's the time.
No more Emmanuel Mosses. Mm-mm. Go get a starting left back.
Exactly. I mean, he was supposed to be one, to be fair, but but this is the time when, you know, you can get the South American players and the European players, because that's when their windows are open.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So kind of, I like ending it there. If he stays, like, whatever, I just think, like, we need to not be afraid to get rid of players. A similar player, actually probably very different, Galese. I said this in my little, I don't know, fireside chat, whatever you want to call it. Galese is rumored to be out of contract. We've heard nothing about a new contract. I think it's end of season. Well, it's definitely end of season, because if his contract ran out June 30th, he wouldn't be playing for us. So end of season, Galese is out of contract. Daniel, would you re-sign him for TAM money?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think he's a good keeper, but, you know, the MLS is a funny league in that the goalkeeper, I think, is one of the most replaceable positions. And although I do think you need a good quality goalkeeper, you know, all things considered, you know, you've got to look at the money. I mean, if he wants, like, you know, $500,000 a year, then yeah, you could give him another year for that. If he starts edging up towards 800, what's the maximum for GAM? Is it for our TAM? Is it, say, 150, right?
No, it's 1.6 million.
Oh, really? Okay, I must have misread that. Well, even then, 1.6 is far too high. You could go out and you could buy a younger goalkeeper. There's someone that, you know, for a longer contract, you know, 3-4 years, someone who you might be able to develop and sell. I mean, if you're going to spend that money, you might as well put it into an investment, you know. Mason is a good goalkeeper. I'm not 100% convinced he's the starting quality keeper they need. But no, the answer in the short answer is no. I wouldn't re-sign him, not unless he wants lesser than what he's getting now.
Adam?
I think it is beneficial for both Orlando City and Pedro Galese to say thank you for your service. We appreciate everything you have done for us. You have been a great goalkeeper for us. Mm-hmm. We will never forget you. Good luck in your future endeavors. Go make $1 million somewhere in Europe, and we'll use that TAM spot on someone else and the international spot.
Agreed.
Yeah. Use it on an outfield player in MLS with in a salary cap league, and in a league where you have such restricted slots that you can use. I say TAM slot, that's not a thing, but that TAM money.
Mm-hmm.
When you have such tight accounting you have to keep track of, using it on a position like goalkeeper, when we do have a guy like Mason Stadahar, who at the very least would deserve a look for the starting job, were we to move on from Galese. And there are good options available domestically, and there are also younger options that you could potentially, you know, when it's their time, sell to improve your team rather than be losing them for nothing.
Y'all know the name Alec Khan?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know how he was backup at
Atlanta?
Atlanta, and then he got signed to Cincinnati.
Oh yeah. Yeah,
I'm sure there are 10 of those guys in this league.
Yeah, well, that same guy is now backup to a draft pick. Go get him.
Yeah.
Go get someone like that.
Or draft a guy.
Draft a guy. Yep.
Or bring up Javi Otero from OCB. You know.
I was going to ask you I don't really follow OCB that closely, but he looks.
Oh, Otero. Awesome
highlights. I just didn't know the name of the guy.
I'm not sure about his distribution or his ability to set a defense, but as a shot stopper, kid can play.
Yeah, you're not wrong about that. He can. You're right. That kid can stop shots for a living.
So that's what I'm saying. We got Mason Stadahar. We got Javi Otero. That's two good in-house options for a potential replacement.
Mm-hmm.
If we were to next season, and don't get me wrong, I love Pedro Galese. He's a great keeper. I'm not trying to kick him out the door. I'm just talking from a pure roster building standpoint. If those were our top two keepers in any order going into next season, I wouldn't be upset at that.
Yeah. I agree with both of you, obviously. Pedro, great goalkeeper. It's just too much. It's too much money for TAM. It's too much money. And honestly, international slot would be nice to have another extra one of those. It would be nice to not lose your keeper for 6-7 games a year to Peruvian national team. Now, do you want to have a national team goalkeeper? That means he's one of the best goalkeepers in the world. Maybe, but that's the sacrifice you pay. But for me, you hit the nail on the head, Daniel. Goalkeepers are a very replaceable position. I literally was talking to someone earlier in the DMs, and I said that like same exact sentence. So that's why I laughed when you said it. Very replaceable position. Get a good shot stopper in. Make sure they're decent with their feet. I mean, like, Galese is not that good at distribution. Like, he does a decent job at it, but he's no Ederson or Alisson. He's just your everyday goalkeeper who can pull a save out of nowhere. And, like, I'm very open to the idea of just cutting ties at the end of the season, say thank you very much, like you said, Adam, and on you go. Now, I was interviewing Tom Boger earlier today, and interestingly enough, he said something about Mendez being possibly out of contract. He wasn't 100% sure, so I'm not going to say that's true, but it did get my wheels spinning. He hasn't been playing a lot. He hasn't really featured that much at all, really, now that I think about it. Adam, I'll start with you. Where do you stand on re-signing Mendez before the season's out?
I don't think that Mendez should re-sign with us, because it's very, very clear in the eyes of Oscar Pereja and probably whatever coaching staff comes in that Cesar Araújo has that sixth position locked down. And he's apparently not willing to try Mendez at eight, where I think he could have success, because I think he's just a flat out better player than Andres Barea, but that's not what's happening. So he obviously wants to be, he could be a national team captain with regular playing time. He's that talented and that entrenched for Ecuador, at least was at one point. If he wants to advance his career in the way that I'm sure he wants to, he doesn't need to be playing for Orlando City. And it brings me no joy to say that, but it's the truth. And if we're not going to use him in the way that we should be using him, and we're going to insist on playing Andres Pereja as, the fix-all midfielder when we need to put a midfielder in, then no, I wouldn't re-sign him, and I don't think he should accept a contract offer from us.
I think there's a financial thing here, and this is obviously both parties have to agree for the re-signing to happen. So I understand that. There is a World Cup this summer that he will be at, or this winter, that he should be at. Ecuador is in the World Cup. He's usually part of their national team. Losing him on a free in a World Cup year would be very bad business practice, in my opinion. So is there an angle, Daniel, of some, and maybe this is too late to have this conversation. We should have, as a club, had this conversation earlier. But trying to get him to re-sign, and but before the World Cup was even a thought in his mind.
I mean, you don't want to be leaving it this late. I had no idea he was out of contract at the end of the year. So
I don't know if he is. I don't know if he is. Mm. But if he is, like, and it makes sense. We signed him so long ago. I think, what, 4 years ago now?
I mean, if Tom Berbert thinks he is, then I would say that there's a good chance it's true, you know? He's mm-hmm. he's obviously very clued in. So, I mean, again, we ask ourselves, why have we left it to the last minute? Especially, didn't they turn down an offer for him, like $7 million or so?
That was very unbelievable. It was from like a Central American team.
No one was paying us $7 million for Sam Huffman. And this is before his breakout year last year.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no one paying $7 million for him.
Understood. That's fine. I just wondered. Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, I don't think he's going to want to sign. He's not playing enough. And if he's not a fit into the system, you know, then it seems like, I don't know, it seems like we're running up to another dead end with this one, which is a shame. He's too good a player to lose for free. Let's put it that way.
I wouldn't be surprised if we're moving on from him this window, honestly. I wouldn't be surprised to see, like, out of nowhere.
Yeah, if we're not going to use him, transfers. We might as well sell him. You know, because we could still probably get $2 million for him.
$2 million is what they initially spent, right? So
that's something we could get that back.
Yeah.
He's still worth something. Let's not get it twisted. He was excellent last year. You know, mm-hmm. had some injury problems, but he was excellent. I think that is probably the coaching staff's biggest mistake this year is just dropping Sebas.
Mm-hmm.
Especially given our problems in midfield and especially playing through our press, which Sebas can do, and just, you know, linking short area spaces and linking defense to midfield to attack are all his strengths. And we've had problems in those areas. I think it's a mistake. Obviously, everyone knows I really rate him as a player. I think it's a huge mistake to have dropped him completely for Araujo and also to be so rigid in his positioning as saying he's only a six that we're playing Andres Perea in so many minutes that Sabas could be getting because he could be doing a better job there.
I mean, it's hard to disagree. I do think it is a mistake, the way we've handled Sebastian Mendez this season. Like I said, I like the idea of sticking Pereira out on the right, use that as a creative right-sided player. On the left, stick Facundo Torres, Kakara through the middle, late runs from Urso, go that route. Because what's happening right now is not working. Like, it is results-wise, I guess, but not quality-wise in the attack. All right, let's go ahead. Anything else on that, you guys?
Not on that one, no. I wasn't aware of that, to tell you the truth, so I didn't have a chance to think about it much.
Yeah, neither was I. It was literally today when I was like, oh, interesting. Last quick bit here. There's been some, obviously, Tesho's catching flack because Tesho exists. Because
he's Tesho, right?
Yeah. I don't know. So Jack Flynn's been having a stormer of a season in MLS Next Pro. I mean, I think he's joint lead scorer. And we've seen players. There was a player in Houston who got moved up after like 5 goals in 7 games. And he plays a little bit for Houston's first team now. Is there a case for Jack Lynn to overtake Tesho's spot in the depth chart just for the next few weeks to give him a run out and see what he's got?
What do you think, Daniel? Yes, but not a good one.
Oh. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
You go ahead. Yes, there's a case, but not a good one. And it's mostly on Tesho, actually. Tesho's done nothing to lose his spot. He doesn't play that much. He's a backup. He's squarely a backup. He's got 2 guys ahead of him in the depth chart. What more do you want? I would rather have, from my third striker, a guy who can play defense, a guy who can play all 3 front positions, a guy who can press his tail off, a guy that occasionally, if he's on the field enough, will pop up with a goal. He can get that poacher's finish. A guy that can pass, a guy that can link outside the box. I want a guy with veteran MLS experience. I want all those qualities rather than the guy who scored a bunch of goals in the lower division from my third striker. If we were completely, if we were like, no, Erchankara and Pato can't play and Tesho is the guy we're relying on to be our guy, then it's a different question. Then it's, okay, let's see what the Jack Lynn kid's got. Jack Lynn's not going to play ahead of Pato or Erchankara. So why are we getting the hot shot in that third role where he's going to get very few minutes and not even be able to show his stuff versus the guy that's going to need to be able to do a bunch of little specialized roles when we need him, which is what Tesho is much better at.
Daniel?
Yeah, I'm pretty much on board with that. Tesho's not going to be able to do anything with 2, 3, 5, 10 minutes, whatever he gets. You know, he doesn't get enough minutes to do anything. I mean, anyone that's kind of getting on his case about that, honestly, needs to go follow a different sport, if you ask me. Because, you know, give him 6 or 7 starts, you know, play the majority of the games and he performs badly, then yeah, you can have a conversation about it. But he's getting scraps. I mean, even Jack Lynn gets, what, 1 minute, 2 minutes, and that's it. I don't know how you expect any player to do anything in that time. So, I don't know. It baffles me. I think he's doing, like what Adam said, he's doing what he's been asked to do. How can you punish him for that, you know? End of the season, when they churn out the roster, then, yeah, maybe they've got to look at promoting Lynn up and kind of have that succession plan. But right now, I don't see the need to change that.
Yeah, here's the thing. If we were up 3-0 in a game, I'd feel very comfortable saying, yeah, put Jack Lynn on for 20 minutes. I'd love to see him play. We're just not that good. We don't go 3-0 up. I can't remember the last time we've scored or we've been up by 3 clear goals. It's been a while. Last time I think we've scored 3 goals in a game once this season. That was against DC in the 5-3 loss. So, like, that's just not going to happen. It's just not. So, for now, I say Tesho, definitely. He comes on, he presses, he does the jobs. But I would like to see Jacqueline given a chance because I think he's earned it at this point. It's just we haven't found the right spot to give him a proper 20-minute go.
Yeah, that's fair. It's, you got to put them into the right situation. You can't just put them in and just say, oh, yeah, this is it's like FIFA. We just put them in and they score. And it's not how it works. You got to put
the people into. The crowd goes wild.
Oh, yeah. That was quite a stirring rendition. I like that.
Let's go ahead and move into listener questions. Thank you for everybody who always asks questions. We love answering them. So let's get straight into it. First up is at Adrian_Viveros. He had a fun little question here. If 11 herons fly into a lion's den, how many of them fly out alive? Adam, you've already answered it. -2. I would say -3. Because they basically got -3 points.
You just had to one down me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one down you. Well, I was actually looking at the table, and this match was basically a 6-pointer. We are now 6 points ahead of Inter Miami, and if they would have won, we would have been tied on points. Like, it was a big, like, now we're at a solid gap, and if we had lost or tied, it would have been a lot less. Y'all know what a 6-pointer is. I don't know why I'm explaining that. Here's a more serious one. NJ Tommy at Agway Goat always has good questions. Daniel, going to you. Derby bragging rights are fun and all, but the performance was still lackluster bar a few moments. How sustainable do you think this is before we drop below the playoff line? So first and foremost, do you think we will drop below the playoff line? And how sustainable is what we're doing now?
First of all, the playoff line, I think that Orlando's going to finish 5th or 6th. So I'll put my hat on that now. I think they'll cheese it and they'll get there 5th or 6th. Will it be fun to watch? Probably not. And is it sustainable? Absolutely not, because a lot of these players that are being relied upon to play this way, some of them are getting a year older, and some of them are at that stage where they're not really going to get much better. So unless you get significant investment, you know, you're just going to get more of the turgid defensive performances, and we're not going to see a progression into a more progressive style. So no, it's not sustainable. I would say that if we, yeah, fifth or sixth this season, fine, and then maybe one, two games in the playoffs, but that'll be it. And then next season, I think you'll see Orlando doing a DC or a, you know, or a, I'm trying to think, Montreal started really slow. You're going to see them doing that, you know, they're going to have a really slow start next season, and they'll get figured out. So, no, it's not sustainable, not in my opinion.
Adam, if we finish fifth or sixth, does Prey have to go?
I will let you know the answer to that question after our Open Cup run is done, whenever it is, because that is honestly what would decide it at that point. That, and obviously if we win a playoff game or two or not.
I guess that's fair. Good point. Adam, from @Marema_4, you are probably going to talk about everything I want to know already, but just in case. So hopefully we talked about everything you want to know. Marema is interested in our opinions on this transfer window. They don't seem to be in a rush to get anything, and I feel desperate for something. What do you think is our biggest need?
10.
Really?
Yes. Specifically someone who is more, we mentioned Paulo Dybala briefly. He would be my pipe dream. And I know we all kind of like, we're buzzing around the rumor of Jesse Lingard. Are we one of the teams on him? Probably not. I think a really, really, really high quality, more pure, because Mauricio Pereira played 8 and he played right mid at Krasnodar. And that's where he was at his best for most of his career. We play him at 10 here because he's, you know, better than everyone else, but he's not a natural 10. And it shows in his, you know, lack of ability, willingness, whatever, to just take shots, let alone score. So a 10 that is willing to take shots, a 10 that has some goal scoring chops, a 10 that will force the back line to step to him, and, you know, bring one or two guys off of Erchankara and Faku Torres and Alexander Pato, and that will open things up a little bit, and then maybe a more dynamic play style, maybe will force some other guys to run with him. If we're talking about a guy that I think could save our season, it would be a 10 of that style. And that would be, in my opinion, our biggest need, because our season needs saving. It, like, you know, Daniel said in his answer to previous question, our style is not sustainable. These results are not sustainable. The underlying numbers are not there. We are not playing well. We are somehow getting results kind of when we need to get them out of whatever pulled out of our ass we could do. But we need to score goals, and a guy that's going to, you know, by hook or crook, make it so we can score goals, I think is our biggest need.
I thoroughly agree with that answer. Daniel?
Can't really add much to it. The only thing I would say about the number 10 is that I would like to see, and this is no disrespect towards Pereira in any stretch. Like, I think if he played as an attack-minded 8, I think he would do very well, and he could dictate play, even if he was allowed to drop a little bit deeper, you know. But a 10 for me needs to be someone with a good low centre of gravity that can take the ball on the half turn and open up the field. And then I would also like to add, aside that, a winger, certainly a good winger. And if the right player became available, another striker. But that's all very speculative. I'd be surprised if we... I think there's a good chance one of those players would sign. But it's likely to be a name that's available who might not be necessarily a good fit, whereas I'm leaning more towards buying somebody younger that you can you know, that you can play and you can develop, that can run, who can make things happen. So I'd be very surprised. If I had to pick two, I'd want the number 10 and the winger. But I think we'll end up with one decent signing and maybe a depth player, and that'll be it.
And yeah. Also to address the other part of Mariam's question, you are, I think, the embodiment of the entire fan base, and that we are all sitting on the edge of our seat wanting something to happen and feeling like it won't. So, yeah, I think we're all on the same page there, that we hope so.
Yeah. About it. Yep. Next up, Adam at 007 underscore Saint. Kara's execution has been disappointing, in my opinion. I find that his dribbling, holding speed, and overall athletic physical performance is lacking. Am I wrong? What am I missing? What needs to happen for him to be successful in Orlando City? Then he says, hashtag clone DK.
I mean, a little bit you're wrong. You're not wrong in that he's slow, and that he's a little clunky, and that he's not a great dribbler. What he is a goal scorer. And if you give him service, he'll score goals. That's what he was in Austria. That's what he is here. When he does get the service, he does score the goals. We don't have any service for him. We're not getting him the ball. We're not creating the space. He doesn't create his own shot. So if you're expecting him to do that, that he's never been that guy, he will never be that guy, most likely. So if you had those expectations for him to be, just because he's a DP, this all-world striker who will pop up with a goal game like DK did almost no matter what, which I'm still not sure how DK would do that. That man is so clinical. He would score from the worst angles and just the ball would go in for him. Anyway, I miss him.
Yeah.
But anyway, Ercan Kara, he is exactly the same player that he was, like we said before when discussing him, exactly the same player he was in Europe. That team was set up a lot better for him to have success in than ours is. So I would, and you know, Gavin's point to him, you don't necessarily need to be super fast or super agile to still work well with off-ball movement. And he certainly has the soccer IQ to be able to do it. I don't know that he's being encouraged by the coaching staff to have off-ball movement as a priority and showing for the ball a little bit more. I think that's what, I agree very much with Gavin. That's a place where he could certainly improve. But as far as who he is and what he does, I think that he's about on par for the course as far as just pure individual performance as what we expected of him.
Yeah, he's definitely been a little disappointing throughout the course of a match. And I can see why these questions are coming up, but at the end of the day, we aren't doing enough as a team to help him succeed. It's simple as that. So no, I don't think you're fully wrong, Saint, or that you're missing anything. We just as a team need to improve. And there's a good conversation under there. Alex at Orlando City Lion, was getting in there and having some conversations. So definitely recommend reading all of that. At Rindner OCSC, Adam, this one's for you. Will we see Cappies as at the next home game, asking it for a hungry fan?
I mean, I think Daniel can take this one. He hasn't answered a question in a minute.
Daniel, is Cappies going to be at the next game?
Adam, get your fucking ass down there now.
Okay, I got some dates for y'all. We're not at the next game, I believe, but we are going to be at, pulling up my calendar. Okay, all you Orlando soccer fans who love Cappies, we will be at Broken Strings Brewery. Unfortunately, not at the next game, but we will be at the friendly versus Arsenal on July 20th.
Oh, yes.
We are going to be there before the Arsenal-Chelsea friendly.
Ooh.
Which I believe there is also an Orlando City game that day. Right? On the 23rd?
There is, yeah, you're right. It's is it Atlanta?
It's Philly. We play Atlanta on the 17th. There's a watch party for that, y'all.
at, we'll be there. Oh yeah, so we'll be there on that day. And also, of course, the unofficial food truck of the Orlando City Open Cup run will be present for the Open Cup semifinal at Broken Strings Brewery on Wednesday, the 27th. If you are not familiar with Broken Strings, they're a fantastic craft brewery. The guys there are all great. They have a bunch of good beer. It's a cool venue. It's family friendly. The Ruckus Lot is nearby with $10 parking. You know, they are a great host for us. It's within walking distance of the stadium. You really should go check them. And, you know, everyone's Orlando City there. It's a great atmosphere. So really should go check them out. Even if we're not there, they always have food trucks before a game, and they have tons of cool events. Just, yeah. So awesome partners with them, Broken Strings.
Yes, Broken Strings Brewery. The watch party for the Atlanta match is at 10 Roof Bar in Icon Park. So yes, it's awesome to hear. Similar question to the other one, so we'll skip that one. Oh yeah, we'll do this one, I guess. The last one's not serious. Daniel, how do we get better, more any service in Nakara so something dangerous can happen? More Mulroney on the left and Halliday on the right, question mark. I don't know if either of you, did you see the game, Daniel?
I did. I saw most of it.
Okay. So you might be confused, Adam, but Halliday came on and had a pretty decent showing. And so that's why people are starting to pipe up with Halliday talk.
I did see that, but full disclosure to everyone, I fell asleep during the game because it was so late. So I didn't see most of it, but I did see the glorious own goal at the end.
Oh yeah. That's kind of why we're having we haven't talked in forever. That's why we're having a general discussion anyways, covering a lot of matches here. On to you, Daniel.
I mean, in theory, you want to be playing Mulroney. He's the only player out wide we have now that can deliver a ball. So, yeah, he has to play by virtue of that. As for Halliday, he looks promising. I'll certainly say I'm not against Halliday being given a chance in the team. But I don't think he's, you know, of the type of player that you want to try and run your entire attack through. Like, it seems like we have this obsession with trying to run all the attacks through the right back. And just because he's going to replace Uwan, does that mean that he should now take up the mantle of being able to do it? You need to have your focus being on your attackers being good enough. And then your players like Halliday can supplement that and make those third man runs. And that's where you'll get probably more productivity, you know? So, in favour of Halliday being given a chance, I'm just not in favour of him being made into a modern-day Cafu, you know? He's only played a few minutes, you know, so I think we'd just go one step at a time with him, you know?
Yeah. Halliday on the right's interesting. I wouldn't start him.
I certainly wouldn't play him out wide. I wouldn't play him as a winger. I mean, I don't know if the question was alluding to playing him as a winger, but absolutely not. I mean, I think the way players like Halliday work at fullback is that some wide players are just simply better at running onto the ball into space. But it's a completely different game when you're the last man forward, and or the furthest man forward, I should say, and you're expected to get the ball and make something happen. There's a completely different style and skill set needed there.
Yep.
And to be honest with you, if he had that skill set, he would already be in the academy and the fringes of a first team in a top five league, because those players are very hard to find.
Yeah, that's Benji's problem. He's best at running into space, not creating his own space and limited amounts of it. And that's why he's been struggling to be like a consistent goal scorer throughout his career. And then Mulroney at left back. No, I think if we're going to do that sort of setup, it's got to be wing backs, and we have to have our starting back three of Schlegel, Carlos, and Jansen. We that would be in both of the wide areas, we would be suspect on defense, and I would be a little afraid to do that.
Yeah,
yeah, and then last one here is just a joke at r_collins318 says, what is the terminal velocity of an unladen swallow? And then, oh, there is a real one in here. Sorry. Any legs on the Suarez or Lingard rumors? I haven't even seen a Suarez rumor.
Well, for the joke, first of all,
just pause it, pause the podcast and go, you know,
don't tell them to pause.
Pause the podcast. Anchorman's on Netflix now, so go watch all of Anchorman to get to a scene where Brick laughs uncontrollably. Then you can finish listening to the podcast.
There you go. Thank you, Adam.
There goes all our listeners. Okay.
I'll be like 98% done by this point.
Fair enough.
And we haven't even talked about the Miami game. That's the funny thing.
Oh, yeah. So anyways, let's talk about what happened in the third minute now. Suarez
never
and Lingard
underestimate our ability to talk for an hour and a half about literally anything.
It's a beautiful skill. Yeah, nothing on the Suarez or Lingard rumors. I don't think either of them are coming. We actually did have, I forgot about this question. It's in the group chat, so I don't disclose who this person is. Can we discuss what the strategy is going to be for this crazy month of games? I haven't actually looked at what we have up ahead. So let's look at that. We have...
That's a lot.
Oh my, holy shit. Colorado tomorrow. Excuse my language. Colorado tomorrow, Atlanta United on Sunday.
Wait, we're apologizing for cursing now?
Oh, sorry for apologizing. That's unlike us.
Fuck you.
Colorado away tomorrow, Atlanta United away on Sunday, home to Arsenal on Wednesday, the 20th, home to Philly on Saturday, the 23rd, home to New York Red Bulls on the 27th, which is midweek, away to DC on the 31st. What is the strategy? Absolutely go all out for a win against Colorado, I would say. Colorado are not good this year. We have to beat them. If we're even close to considering ourselves being a serious team, we have to beat that team. Atlanta, anything can happen. We'll probably lose that game even though they suck. Philadelphia will probably beat us in our own house. I don't know. What do you guys feel about the Red Bulls game?
Oh, we have to go out against Red Bulls.
You've no choice but to try and win the game. I mean...
We're so close to a trophy there.
No. I'm not saying should we throw the game. I'm just saying, I mean, they've had our number for the past two seasons now.
I think so. I mean, we got Philly at home before it.
Yeah.
I think you play backups against Philly.
Even if we start our starters, though, that's what I'm saying. Like, how are we going to win that game? Like, we're going to have to really play a deep block.
I don't even think that's the right idea.
They're going to press the bejesus out of us again.
They are. And when you're being pressed like that, the last thing you do is go into your shell. You've got to try and be bold. I'm sorry, but...
I think we try and play long ball.
Well, you've got to do something.
We should, but we don't do that.
You've got to do something. Like, you can't... Even if you're going to be pressed and pressed, you've got to try and do something. You're at home. You're in the cup semi-final. You don't sit and defend. I'm sorry, you attack. You've got to give them something to think about.
It would be interesting to see a Benji Michel start going off. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we should play long ball. Benji is defensive, has some defensive chops now after being forced to play on the wing these past 3 years. So he can do a job there. And you know, we're going to need a speed outlet. So have him, Faku, and maybe start Pato over Kara just for like a little bit more. I hate that like an ancient Pato at this point is still faster than Kara.
I would start a pressing four. Benji, Tesho.
Tesho.
Facundo and... Pereira, and play long and win second ball.
Semifinal is...
That's the take. That's the take.
That's bold.
Pressing. Press them. Press them.
I think we've tried to press Red Bulls before, and it hasn't worked. They're better at it than us.
Second ball tactics. You can do that.
I agree.
We can do
I
that.
I agree with second ball tactics, but, you know, more long ball than pressing.
Well, Carr ain't going to help. He doesn't press. He's just kind of there.
That's what I'm saying. I would go Pato with just his ability to end up on a ball.
Yeah.
I would go Pato.
I guess, yeah.
Benji, Torres, front three, Gata Pereira, and then just kind of the rest standard. But, you know, lots of Janssen and AC long balls. Hopefully AC's back. He should be. Maybe Kyle Smith at right back. Moutinho, if we still have him by that point. I wouldn't try the Juan up the right at all. I would just play Kyle Smith and, you know, try not to get beat backwards.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, I'm very nervous for that game. But if we can get past the New York Red Bulls, if we figure it out and somehow just eke out a win, like, we're the favorites in the final, no matter what. And we're hosting it. And
yeah, at home against Sac Republic or SKC has to be a win.
Has to be.
If we somehow beat Red Bulls, which, you know, say it's 1-1 through 120 and we win penalties, right? Say we somehow beat Red Bulls. There's zero excuse, and it would be the most Orlando City thing to lose that game. But, like, after we beat LAFC and MLS is back, and then we lost to Portland. Portland were a good team, don't get me wrong, but we beat the best team in the league.
Yeah.
It would be the most Orlando City thing to lose that final to Sac Republic.
Yeah, that would be...
And the entire U.S. soccer world would be rooting for Sac Republic.
That would be
bad. Everyone would be celebrating so much in our faces.
Well, let's cross that bridge when we get there. I think it's time to get out of here. I think July is going to be a really difficult month, and we didn't do ourselves any favors in June or May. So there's that. Thank you guys for discussing with me, as always. Really appreciate it. Daniel, where can our listeners find you at?
Bucketman1982 on Twitter.
And a bar in Scotland. Adam, where can our listeners find you at?
Oh, I was going to say in the pub.
Oh, in the pub.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Kosher Taco Truck. For my personal accounts, I do not own a Kosher Taco Truck, but I do own the Cappy's Food Truck. That's at Cappy's Food Truck, also on Twitter and Instagram for business thingy bobbers.
And a pub in Australia.
There you go.
Always. Apparently.
Always a pleasure, boys. Always a pleasure. Have a good rest of your night, my friends.
Vamos.
Good night, guys.
Shoots, scores! DK wins it for Orlando!